Hello and welcome to This Is Property. Emily Wallace and John Pigeon here, also known as the two property nerds who just love hanging out and chatting about all things property. Today we've got a Q&A episode. We are working our way through all your questions because there's plenty of them, but lots of different topics today around tenants in common, joint ventures, investment properties, and even some questions around some interesting ads people have been seeing about buying property. There's a lot of noise out there, so we're going to try and unpack that for you. We're also going to do a little bit of a deep dive into what John and I are seeing in the market at the moment. We both work in very different markets in Australia, and so we're going to have a little bit of chat about what we're seeing on the ground, which should give you some insight as to what's happening out there. John, how does that sound?
That sounds unreal, Emily. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Right, so what's happening on the ground in good old Melbourne, Emily? It's starting to get into cooler months of the year. So what's the auction status doing?
It is indeed. This is when we see the black puffers come out at auction and the unsuspecting crowd members. It's interesting because I don't think anyone truly knows what's happening right now in the market. It's a very two-paced market, and so we're seeing some really big results on properties that are scarce in supply. So a lot of those classic single-fronted Victorian properties in the inner ring that have some charm everybody wants. But then we're seeing in some areas an oversupply of what I like to call shonky apartments.
Right.
Yes. So investors selling out of those, probably sometimes at a loss.
Yeah. And would that be due to maybe the introduction of taxes in Victoria, or the higher holding costs, or the fact that they haven't made any money on them, or a combination of all three?
Definitely a combination of all three, but it's not because they can't rent them out. And you know, sometimes people offload properties because they're just the vacancy rates are not in their favour, and they're just like, well, I'll just offload it because I can't even rent this thing out. We're not experiencing that at all. We've got plenty of rental demand, but we do have an issue where the holding costs are quite high. One thing I've noticed, particularly with apartments, obviously apartments have body corporates, the insurance premiums have gone through the roof. And so the body corporate fees, even just for a basic 70s brick build apartment, like you used to be able to bank on sort of 1800 to maybe 2200 a year was kind of like the standard. Now it's like, oh, if it's around 3000 a year, that's probably all right. And it's just jumped up from nowhere. It's crazy. So that's also been a factor as well.
Yeah. And in some ways it's out of your control, isn't it? As a landlord.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
But because you're part of a bigger body, and if works need to be done or something happens, I'm actually going through that at the moment with our unit, and I vow never to buy an apartment ever again. I'm saying it here today, but yeah, they're just things that were out of our control that all the costs are now due because of something that's gone wrong within the building, and sometimes you don't know whether something was built well or not until years on.
Very true. And then maintenance funds. It's interesting whether you, I was having this debate with a client recently, whether you do have higher body corporate fees ongoing, so you have a maintenance fund sitting there to draw down upon, you know, if the building needs repainting or the stairwell needs recarpeting, or do you have a lower body corporate ongoing and then get slapped with special levies when a big project comes up like that? So yeah. I'm personally of the mindset that the higher body corporate, providing you're planning on staying there and seeing the reward of that money being invested into the block, is worthwhile. Other people would prefer a special levy to be slapped onto them, but sometimes these special levies are like $5,000, $6,000, $7,000. I don't know that many people have that big of a buffer in addition to general maintenance items for their apartment itself.
No.
To just pay that.
Yeah. And especially a lot of older owner-occupiers that have been there for 20 years that are maybe on a pension even, that may not have a mortgage but might not have a lot of disposable cash. So, yeah, you feel for them in that situation. Okay, so you're seeing a two-tiered market in Melbourne at present. So the good properties are still flying out the door and the crappy properties as normal are sticking around and maybe copping a little bit of a discount.
Yeah, definitely. And the biggest trend of buyers is certainly those first home buyers who have decided we're going to buy our first home sooner than we thought because renting is just too tricky. And some of the rental increases I've heard are crazy figures. Like they're insane. And so it's pushing them out of rentals and someone else will pay it, you know. But that's probably the most popular buyer type at the moment, first home buyers getting out of the rental market.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just updating my CPDs, Emily, for the certificate in real estate that we both hold.
Yes.
And I was reading somewhere where a lot of tenancy agreements have now got in them what the next increase will be in their agreement. So if you're signing at $500 a week, outlining that in 12 months' time it will be going to $550. So the tenant knows full well that will be the increase and that can't be changed, which is a great idea, I think, for both landlord and tenant in that respect.
It would be good if that could be a standard measure. You know, 12 months in advance, you know what to expect because so you can forecast it, budget for it. There's a lot to be said for the representation of tenants or lack thereof at times in this sort of market. And just a side note, Glenn put up a question last night on his Instagram asking about, do you think that investing in property is ethical or moral, you know, to do so? And I said, I'm constantly conflicted because I'm a tenant and I'm a landlord or landlady and it's an ongoing battle, you know, who cops it when it's, you know, rates increasing and holding costs increasing and, it's a bit of a kerfuffle, if you ask me.
You've got to be very impartial because there's pros and cons on both sides, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. And curious to hear what you're seeing in the investor side because I do think investors or people considering being an investor are being more considered in their approach. It's not this bullish approach of let's just buy as many properties as we can. I sort of sense that people are considering their choice a lot more than they previously had when it comes to buying real estate.
Yeah, and in the investment space, as you know, we're in many markets around the country, so it would take me 4 hours to give an assessment of every location that we're in. But we, as an investor or a potential purchaser of real estate, we don't want to be a sheep. We don't want to follow what everyone else is doing. Do we want to be a pioneer? Sometimes, depending on the markets that we're going into or the type of property. But what we're seeing in a lot of markets that we're maybe not playing in is an overheating of that market. So there might be 30 properties on for sale and 26 of them are under offer right now. That's how extreme some of the markets are around the country. And to give the listeners a bit of knowledge on that, some locations in WA, some locations in South Australia, some locations in Queensland that have absolutely got overheat written all over them. So you've got to be very cautious when you're going into those type of markets because especially the example of maybe in Adelaide or a Perth where we've seen a few years of little to no growth in certain suburbs in those areas. So if we're buying at the peak of those markets, and then all of a sudden the momentum stops and everyone says, well, that's enough. I'm not paying that amount for any of the property listed. All of a sudden the growth stops and it could be a few years before you say, well, hang on a minute, I've actually paid too much for that and the market hasn't moved since. Now I'm in maybe a negative equity position. That's the risk of going and buying in a hot market when there's just maybe fear of missing out or just seeing online that they're the places to invest in. You've really got to be sure that you've done the research.
I think that you had said once, maybe a while back now on one of the episodes that once you read an article that, you know, outlines hot spots, it's too late. Like by the time it reaches the media of it being hot, obviously the data shows that and data's always behind the time. So there's every chance it's already peaked and it may be on its way down or it may be, you know, overinflated with a lot of people trying to, you know, do it themselves and think that reading about a hot spot means that they know what's happening in the market. There's a lot more substance to understanding the market than reading some news articles that say this is where to buy.
Yeah, absolutely. And to that point, this week I did an interview with actually a Tasmanian radio station, would you believe, Emily?
And there you go.
Regarding the book.
My cousins.
Yes, absolutely. They probably knew you. But they extracted from the book the hot spots and not spots. And yes. I said, look, to be honest, hotspots for me is a marketing ploy to create awareness of what we do and how we do it. I don't believe in necessarily identifying a hotspot and saying, right, all of my clients need to go and buy there, including me. It's more about relating to someone's strategy and then factoring in numerous locations and then just seeing what the heat of the market is. And there's a location where I spoke to one of our BAs this week and I said, look, we're out of here because all the mobs have arrived and it's time to move on and find a new location for that particular price point.
Out of interest, this is a side note question. And for those who don't know, John helps people to buy investment properties, and I try and make this known because people book in a call with me and they want an investment and I'm like, can you speak to John?
Save you some work.
John, yeah, save my time. No, I'm always happy to chat to listeners. I love chatting to the people. But I'm curious to understand around the offering of locations. Typically, once you know someone's strategy, how many locations would you offer up to them as a starting point before you start deep diving into the actual properties?
Yeah, good question. It really does depend on the price point and the overall strategy for each individual, but anywhere from probably half a dozen through to 12 to 15 locations around the country. So, yeah, it's a lot of clients put their hands in the air and say, look, they all look okay. Why don't you pick for me sort of thing, because there's just too many to pick from. And like anything, if you gave three options, then it's a much easier process than trying to choose one from 12. So we try not to choose too many, but pre-frame to say, well, we've shortlisted them for a reason. That's why they're here. There's a lot that didn't make the cut as well. But yeah, to your point about awareness, we've fixed the problem. So you shouldn't be getting as many calls anymore, Emily, because Marcus, one of our BAs in the team, is offering 15-minute free calls. So,
oh, good.
Yeah, so he's filling the void for you. So if anyone wants to reach out to Envisage Property, you get to speak to Marcus.
Perfect. That's ideal. Sometimes people just want to know what's possible, you know, chat.
That's right.
Chin wag.
But yeah, it's interesting times because I feel there's still many people sitting on the fence. I feel that the upsizers are not upsizing yet because they want to see more certainty with interest rates. And I'm reading a pretty reliable article on the weekend just gone about Australia being one of the last of the first world countries to reduce interest rates because of the state of the economy, because it's pretty strong compared to other countries. So the Americas and the UKs and the Canadas, we may see reduction in interest rates there first, and then we'll be the last, which may mean it's early 25 that the first drop does occur. But yeah, look, anyone's guess, and I think the right time to buy is when you're ready.
Early 25, sometimes I have to remember that we're in 24.
Yeah, that's
we're
right.
Recording in April 24. It's like, oh yeah, that's the year we're in.
Yes,
it's
yeah,
not that far
and
away.
It's flying, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed. Well, I think that's some good insight, right, as to what's going on at the moment. And obviously there's different insights, markets within markets, as we always talk about. John and I have a high-level view of the overall property market, and John's probably more so across a lot more areas than I am. But even in the areas I deal with, you know, north side versus south side, there's nuances within that. So overall, I think it's not like 2021 where everything was going, like everything was selling for more than what it was listed for. That's not the case at the moment.
No. And I will say, just to give listeners a little bit of thought process on what we're doing personally, I am quite bullish about Victoria at the moment. Warren Buffett, when others show fear, I show courage. When others show courage, I show fear, sort of thing, right? Everyone's taking their eye off Victoria at the moment. They're saying, well, why would we go and invest in Victoria? Land taxes have been introduced. There's the government's in disarray. There's just the stamp duty is much higher, et cetera, et cetera. But if you look at the median house price in Melbourne right now compared to Sydney, Brisbane's almost caught up to Melbourne. And Melbourne arguably is the largest capital city in Australia. So you do the maths on that and understand the affordability of people moving into the country and buying real estate. I think it's got a good 2 or 3 years ahead of it. So Envisage is putting a lot of emphasis on Victoria in the next couple of years.
Metro or regional, out of curiosity?
Combination of both, but okay, again, cool. It's price point.
Yes, yeah,
so
of course.
Yeah. You can't take 500K and go and buy a three-bedroom house in middle suburb Melbourne,
no.
But you can take it to regionals still okay.
Yeah, indeed. House prices baffle me sometimes. Sometimes when I look at like what X amount equals in a suburb, I'm just like,
yeah.
And I'm in the game. We're both in the game, but it's just like, wow.
Yeah.
Nuts.
Absolutely nuts. All right, let's get on to some questions, shall we? Or we probably need to take a break, to be honest.
Yes, let's take a quick break and we'll come back with some questions from the listeners.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click Get Help and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. We also have a panel of trusted mortgage brokers we can connect you with to get you into your first home, an investment property purchase, or to review your current loan if you don't have a broker. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
So, Natalie said, what are the pros cons of letting your joint venture partner, which in this case is a sibling, buy your half out of the property you both purchased 50-50 on 5 years ago? One party resides in the property and wants to upsize. The party interested in buying out is an investor. Do you want to have your 2 cents on this first, Emily?
Well, I think before you even get to the point of letting them buy out the half that they put in, I think it comes back to some parameters around the agreement prior to entering the joint venture, which we have definitely touched on previously. And I think there's such an importance around making sure you trust the person you're going into the joint venture with. Now, siblings are quite a common one and quite a good one because the family seems to work out. They're not going anywhere. They're loyal. But there is so much merit in nutting out the what-if situations before you get into the what-if situations in real life, because thinking about them as an afterthought, you might not get the best outcome, or maybe you find yourself in a position where you actually can't service the requirements to own that as an individual. A lot of the time people go into joint ventures for the fact that they actually can't buy solo. So if someone's wanting to get out of that agreement, that arrangement, then the other person might be forced to sell if they can't afford to manage it themselves, or might find themselves quite strapped for cash in trying to repay the mortgage solo. So it's a very interesting proposition.
Yeah, it is. And it's made complicated by one of them living in the property. So I think I've never done a JV where one of us is living in the property. It's always just purely investing and we've got an external tenant living in the place. I think if that was me and I was in that situation, we'd want to make sure that the tenant is just commercial rates, that's the rent you're paying, and the JV is almost separate, like what has to be separate. So it's yes. It's a business, not a emotional thing to say, oh, sister or brother, you can rent it for $200 a week even though it's worth $400, sort of. It needs to be treated as a business as such. But yeah, to your point, Emily, I think before you go into it, you need to have these, I suppose, pegs in the sand that say at 12 months, at 3 years, at 5 years, we need to be discussing, right, are we all good with this? What are our plans, et cetera, et cetera. But before we go into it, also saying, well, how long do you expect to be owning this place? Is it a short-term play? Is it a long-term play? But buying the other out becomes a really interesting, I suppose, situation, because you need to get an independent valuation. You're not going to rely on a real estate agent. You might get three real estate agent sales appraisals, but you would pay for an independent valuation if that was me, just to say, yeah, this is what it's the property's worth. Okay, can we get finance for that to then buy the person out? The one that's not living in the property is the one that wants to do the buying out. So that's all well and good. The other half moves out of that property. The investor gets a new tenant in and everyone's happy, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully not too much disruption there, because, you know, sometimes these joint ventures where someone is residing in the property, there's a reason for that. And, I think you've got to, as you touched on before, make sure it is an agreement where it's basically almost separate, right? Like the rental is the market rate and things like that. But also be prepared that just like any tenancy, you can be disrupted and you can have to move and be okay with that. It's not a guarantee that just because you've gone in on a joint venture, that property's there for life.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
So I don't really know if there's an answer as such other than if you're thinking about doing a joint venture, get your ducks lined up and your I's dotted and T's crossed before you go in, so you know the circumstances to which if X happens, then Y will happen. It's kind of, you know, knowing the moving parts before they unfold.
Yeah, and when you're selling or buying the other one out, it's really a looking at the market saying, do I want to put more dollars into this particular market, or do I want to save my cash for a different market? So, because we may have gone in on the basis that, all right, I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket, but I'm happy to go JV with someone in this particular location or property, so I can continue to do some investing elsewhere. But in this case, what they're essentially doing is putting more money into one particular market. So understanding what that market is and what its growth's been like and maybe some future potential for that particular area and dwelling type as well.
So hopefully that gives you some considerations. There are plenty of inquiries I've noticed around people, like just as in questions and stuff on the Facebook group around joint ventures, because it is a solution to getting into the market. So hopefully if that's you listening at the moment, you've been considering something with a family member or even a friend, just make sure you consider everything before you enter into a joint venture.
Yeah, and we do a pretty solid topic on it in the book as well, to talk about the pros and cons of JVs. I've done probably half a dozen of them through my investing career, and there's all shapes and sizes in terms of why you do one and why you wouldn't do one. But you're right, Emily, this in today's markets where property prices have steamrolled ahead, it may be an option and needs to be an option to be looked at, to say, well, I can get into the market now versus waiting another 5 years to save up enough money, or I'm lacking servicing because my income's not suitable, so I can bring someone in that has higher servicing than myself.
Just a side note, how fun was it seeing everybody at the book launch? I've just realised the last time I saw you was at the book launch.
It was, that's right, in Melbourne, yes. Yeah. It was so fun, and I probably love it more than Glenn does. Like, Glenn still enjoys it, but he would rather sit behind a microphone. I love to get out and talk to the people. We are going to Townsville the time of recording, it's in about 2 weeks' time. So that will be good as well. But, yeah, it's so good meeting people. Oh, I didn't tell you, and this is totally off topic, so if you're getting bored with this episode, just press fast forward. when I was on a charity bike ride, I had a quick stop over at a hospital. Everything's all good now, so people listening,
you
just
personally
don't
worry. Had to go to the hospital. Oh, John, leave your co-host.
I'm sitting in Wangaratta Hospital, and this nurse walks in just started her shift, and she's like, I thought she's coming to help me, and she's like, oh, John, listen to the podcast for the last 5 or 6 years, and I've just purchased my first property in Melbourne, it's so good, and I'm so relieved, and it's like she got all teary, and I'm starting to get teary, and I'm like, I'm in my hospital gown, and it just sang home as to why we do it, and the enjoyment we get out of hearing those sort of stories is fantastic.
That's so cool. Shout out to the nurse from Wangaratta Hospital.
Yes, that's right. So if you're listening, you've made an impact.
That's awesome. That's so cool. By the way, are you definitely okay? We can't be a one-woman show over here. We need you.
No, we're good. We're okay. full noise. We're ready to go.
Good. Yeah. Now, on to another question, because plenty of them here. We've got a question from Nicole about how do you go about organising tenants in common for joint property purchases? Along the similar lines to Natalie's question in a joint venture somewhat, but tenants in common, I actually have a number of clients who have nominated to go into property like this. And, well, in Victoria, you don't state it on the contract. You put both names on the contract, but it's actually organised through the execution of the contract, which is done by the conveyancer.
Yeah.
And also the lender might have some involvement as well as to how the structure is for a tenants in common purchase.
Yeah, so do we just want to quickly explain for the newies what tenants in common is and how it's different from a joint tenancy arrangement?
So by definition, and I'm so glad you asked, John, because I'm prepared here, tenants in common is when two or more people own shares in a property. The shares can be equal or unequal as specified. And when an owner dies, their share is an asset of the deceased estates and can be dealt with by their executor or administrator. So as opposed to just when you sign a contract normally with two people on it, it's just 50-50. Like the title is in both of your names. You both own it. It's effectively
half each. And I suppose the major difference, and we're not lawyers or solicitors or conveyancers, but essentially the joint tenancy means that the 50% is left to the other 50% owner, whereas in the tenants in common arrangement, you can actually nominate who your percentage is left to, and it does not have to be that other person that's on the title with you.
That's probably the clearest distinguisher between the two.
Yeah, I think it's pretty straightforward. It's just because it defaults generally in most states, it will default to joint tenants. So you need to request to have a change to, say, tenants in common and state the breakdown.
Now, we're on a train of N names today. We've had Natalie, Nicole, and now we've got Nicholas.
Yes.
Nicholas has asked, can you use a parental guarantee for a second or third investment property? Was told by our broker it can only be used for PPR or first investment property. Interesting, because there's a bit of nuance in this, and I actually think it does require a broker to unpack it in more detail. But a lot of it would come down to when you're using a guarantor, what percentage you're using the guarantor for, and ensure that the property, or usually it's a parent's property, is not over-leveraged or has enough equity to be a guarantor. I've only personally experienced having a guarantor for one investment property, not multiple, but I think a lot of it would come down to the value/percentage of equity used from the parent's property as to how far they can go.
Yeah, I'm under the impression that you can, and you're right about the equity thing. It's like, okay, if there is equity still available, if it's the third investment, you'd probably assume that it's either a very expensive house with no mortgage or the actual equity has been used up and there's probably none left. But I've seen it happen for a second time. They're very generous and maybe They're okay with handling risk because their sons or daughters have come back for the second or third time to use more equity from their home. So parents need to be okay with that.
Also keeping in mind, like, it's every chance you bought your first investment property with the guarantor, but then the property's grown in value and the percentage of which they were guaranteeing you is now covered because the value's gone up and you've refinanced and they're actually off the mortgage.
Yeah.
So, you know, going back a second time doesn't necessarily mean you've got two properties under the one guarantor. It might just mean you're going back again, but the first one's already been sorted out.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. But, Nicholas, chat to your broker instead of listening to us too.
Yes. I mean, I feel like sometimes they're on the money. Sometimes we try to be on the money.
Always.
But always, as Glenn says, you get what you pay for. The podcast is free.
That's right.
So what do you guys expect?
Yeah. No, I've definitely seen it a second and I don't know if I've seen it a third time, but definitely a second time.
Yes.
Time for one more, have we?
Time for one more. We do indeed. This is a chunky one.
All right. Do you want me to read the chunk?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. It's not an end name. It's Tom. Tom says, I'm suddenly getting bombarded with real estate ads on YouTube and Instagram, and they're all random people selling courses and running summits on rental cash flow, how to get an Airbnb portfolio of 50 houses, 30 houses in 12 months, multiply your wealth instantly in the property market. Surely these are all scams and outdated. Might have worked with no interest rates, but you wouldn't want to be owning 50 Airbnb homes in 2023. How is this not regulated like all other finfluencers that were targeted? I mean, it sounds dangerous to follow their advice. Well, Tom, like this podcast, you do get what you pay for. So you can jump onto realestate.com, you can jump onto YouTube, you can jump onto Instagram, and it costs you nothing to look at all of those targeted ads. They have some algorithms that suggest that you enjoy real estate. So anything to do with real estate, they're going to target people like yourself and myself and Emily. And it's our job to filter that. Whether we unsubscribe or just don't open it, we've got options to be able to remove ourselves from that and have a shield of armor through podcasts like this to gain a level of knowledge that allows us to totally ignore it. So yes, definitely those marketing headlines do allow or attract people in to find out more. And that's a lot of how marketing rolls in 2024, isn't it, Emily?
Look, I think the biggest thing with all these ads promoting multiple properties and all the things that you want to hear, it is a lot to do with creative marketing. And I actually worry what it means for the industry, because the people doing good work and advising correctly and ensuring that people are being informed about what they're doing on their property journey, everyone can be painted with the same brush at times when you see these big campaigns about property spruikers, basically. Like, there's some major red flags in the property industry when people are promising all these big things and very much under-delivering. And there's been actually many court cases where people have come unstuck because of what they promised. And I guess the best piece of advice I could give to anybody who sees these ads or thinks something might be too good to be true, goes to a seminar or whatever it might be, is Google the owner of the company and maybe even use Reddit, because Reddit, I love Reddit. Love going on a bit of a tangent on
Reddit.
Do you? Yeah, I love Reddit. We're on Reddit. Did you know that? There's stuff about us on there. Yeah.
There you go.
Good stuff.
Is it?
Yeah. Yep. About the podcast and just as a resource of people to listen to, which is cool.
Yeah, awesome.
But Reddit is a goldmine when it comes to trying to do something for the first time or inquiring about businesses. And there's some very interesting information out there on Reddit about some of these big companies that promise a lot and not much happens.
No. Yeah. And look, it's not just like it's been going on for years, ever since online marketing commenced, really. So it is up to us as a consumer to ignore it if you feel that it's not realistic, or just simply go through the process and find out what it's all about. I actually used to do a lot of that back in the day because I found it was a way, and you go in with eyes wide open, right? It was a good way to educate yourself on what not to do is just as much as what to do. So it may be not a bad way to educate, as long as you've got the gumption to be able to say, look, I'm no longer interested. Take me off your list, and you move on. So, yeah, take it all with a grain of salt, and be, I suppose, you surround yourself with the people you can trust.
And I think the best recommendations come from someone who's already used somebody as well, right? Mm. Like, if you are looking for services, although Glenn has also spent a lot of time in selecting businesses when it comes to, you know, brokers and planners and things like that. It's sortyourmoneyout.com/get help from memory. The link is in the show notes. But when it comes to buying property or any services related to that, or maybe someone who's disguised themselves as a buyer's agent, but they're not really, I would always go for recommendations of someone who's used somebody previously and, you know, has had a good experience with a good result.
Yeah, totally. But in respect to the question, just finishing, how is this not regulated? Well, it's nothing to do with the industry per se. Well, it is at the end, but initially it's just general marketing. So, yeah. It's hard to pinpoint something.
Well, bit of a mixed bag of questions today, and we've still got plenty more to get through. So if this is your first time listening to an episode of This Is Property, stick around for more in the coming weeks. Maybe make sure you press the subscribe button so you get notified when the episodes come out. But we do love answering questions. We also love getting in experts, and we try and chop and change between the two types of episodes. So let us know what you're enjoying, what you want more of, what you want less of. Let us know in the Facebook group. But hopefully today's given you some food for thought at the very least on some different parameters around property.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're sitting there bored, tell a friend about us or hit the subscribe button or give us a review. I'm off to Reddit to go and Google your name, Emily. And until next time, take care.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast. It's time to get the property you want. If buying your first home or investing in property is something you're interested in, check out John Pidgeon's book, Sort Your Property Out and Build Your Future. John covers the essentials like how to find hotspots and notspots, due diligence, mortgages, tax stuff, grants and schemes, and how to set up your investing timeline. It's the only book you'll need about buying and investing in property. Visit sortyourpropertyout.com to grab your copy. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Simo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.